My guest this afternoon is the Director of Public Prosecutions in Northern Ireland, Barra McCrory. Barra was something of a surprise in terms of his appointment to this post for a whole lot of different reasons. He's a Gaelic speaker. He came from a legal family. His father was a celebrated lawyer in this town for many years. And Barra followed in his footsteps, switched to the bar, and then ended up Director of Public Prosecutions. Erin Kiddle, she is Barra. Well, to Fos a Shenam Kiol.
What heck, ain't she? Comedic is fager, Eamon, Erin Drogher, Neil Moran, Sir Ugum, Nelayan to Shaw, Chem Hig, Coltus Coltery, Erin, Ahan, Majin, Jasahan, Lima, Fasti, so.
Agus an bhfuil na plaistí mon ciúil comai.
Ó, tá sem mór acu sa ciúil. So, dinne bhain ar an concertina agus dinne eile ar an idil agus fadjog.
Well, I was just asking the Director of Public Prosecutions if he's still playing Irish music and if his children are still playing Irish music, and as he's just explained in Irish to me, yes, he goes to Coltus Coultry every Saturday morning to engage in Irish music and the playing of traditional Irish music, and his children are involved in that. So you know a little bit more about him now from his private life. Mr. McCrory, could I just ask you, are you still enjoying the job?
Yes. I have to say I wouldn't have thought of it in terms of the extent to which I'm enjoying it, but I am. It's a fascinating job in terms of its centrality within the criminal justice system. I can't think of any greater a challenge.
When you talk about a challenge, what essentially do you want to bring to this job, though? What changes do you want to see within your tenure?
Well, I want to bring my perspective to the job as someone who has practiced criminal law all his life, who has a sense of fairness, a sense of justice, and as someone who I think can make a significant contribution to perhaps implementing certain improvements which will bring about a more efficient and fair and perhaps faster system of justice.
But Mr. McCrory, this job is just not about criminal law. The brief is a very wide brief. Are you sufficiently knowledgeable on the broader aspects of law to be an efficient, effective Director of Public Prosecutions?
Well, I've been a lawyer, Eamon, in various guises for nigh on 25 years. So my experience has touched upon every aspect of the law. And also in terms of specialisation in the criminal law, that brings with it a whole area of human rights practice in terms of judicial review and other perspectives outside the narrow focus of the criminal law. So I certainly believe I bring with me to this job a significant amount of experience.
How given to judicial reviews are you? Are you very sympathetic to the whole concept of judicial review?
Well, it's an area of law which requires a broader perspective perhaps than the sometimes narrow focus of the criminal law now. I use that term guardedly because the criminal law is very broad in its scope, but certainly judicial review requires an approach which is more broadly based and which applies sometimes different principles of fairness, but nonetheless they are still principles of fairness and what's right and just.
But, you know, though, for many, many years, Mr. McCrory, the usage or application of judicial review was very limited, very rare indeed, in my early days as a reporter in Northern Ireland. Are you encouraged that more and more people are prepared to engage in availing of this mechanism as another resort of human right?
I have no difficulty with it. I think... Myself and my father were among a small group of lawyers who perhaps first brought judicial review to the fore in terms of its use as a legal tool in establishing rights. So far be it from me to criticise anyone who seeks to employ that mechanism to enforce or apply rights now. I have no difficulty with it whatsoever.
Let me ask you about something else which is increasingly used in Northern Ireland and in Britain, and it's the deployment or the recourse of individuals, particularly individuals in public life, to avail of super injunctions. What's your take about super injunctions? Is it fair that just because you have money, you can actually impede knowledge coming into the public gaze?
I have to say, that is an area which, with respect, is perhaps out with the scope of my role in the criminal justice system at the moment. I mean, certainly insofar as the balance of rights are concerned, there will always be this competing tension between the right to privacy and the right of the general public to have knowledge of certain events and processes. So those are tensions which need to be resolved by and large outside of the forum of the criminal justice system. So I'm limited in what I can say about it. Really.
Let me ask you, though, do you think we should have a privacy law per se, or is there adequate protection for the individual here from a privacy point of view?
Well, at the moment, it's more of a human right than an issue for the criminal law to determine.
But should we have a privacy law? Should we have a full-blown privacy law per se here?
I don't think it's appropriate for me as Director of Public Prosecutions to get into a debate as to what laws should and should not be introduced to extend the scope of the criminal code. So I think I'll resist being drawn on that issue.
I think historically it's fair to say that your father and people like you and the leading criminal lawyers in this city had a very hostile view towards the whole deployment and the application of the so-called supergrass system. What's your position on those supergrass cases?
My position on you call it supergrass, I would use the term assisting offenders case.
You're now, of course, very establishment in your usage of language. Originally, you would have called the supergrass case with respect, wouldn't you?
No, not at all. Any language I use, I hope I use accurately. So I think that's a proper description. But my approach to any of these cases is no different than it is to any other case. And I have to say, either from a defence perspective or a prosecutorial perspective, but I am now Director of Public Prosecutions, and I therefore must address every single case which is brought to me as a potential prosecution individually. And it is simply this. There will be an analysis of the evidence and an assessment as to whether or not that evidence, when tested in a criminal court, is likely to bear up. So I make no prejudgments about the nature of the evidence. I have no preconceived notions as to whether or not any type of evidence is preferred over another. It is my duty as a prosecutor and the principal prosecutor in this jurisdiction to take each case as it comes. What I will say is this, is that the benefit of having a judgment in that case has not been lost on me. There has been a very detailed critique of the evidence in that case, which I have been able to examine and to prepare a range of tests that I believe must be applied in examining that type of evidence in the future, which I have passed on to the investigators so that they can, in assessing the evidence of that kind, before they send it to us for independent examination, will themselves rigorously test it under each of those headings.
Just hold that then. Are you saying to me that you would be very reticent to go down this road unless you felt you had a 100% potential success?
No, I didn't use the term 100% at all. But what I did say is that it is incumbent upon any prosecutor in any case to examine the evidence very carefully and to be of the view that there's a reasonable prospect of a conviction. Now, when it comes to the uncorroborated evidence of an accomplice, it is incumbent upon prosecutors to be extra careful when examining and testing that evidence. And it is incumbent upon the investigators who introduce the accomplices to the prosecution to test what is being conveyed to them by the accomplice for veracity and accuracy and evidential value before they send it to us.
So is it reasonable, though, to deduce from what you've said, Mr. McCrory, that you would be very reticent to entertain this route, this avenue of evidence-assisted or whatever you call it, rather I call it a supergrass system, would you be very, very reticent to go down that road again?
Well, when Mr. Justice Gillen set out the law in respect of uncorroborated accomplice evidence, he reminded us, as prosecutors, of the need to be extra careful when dealing with evidence of that kind. So that was a statement of the law as it stands. That was not lost on me as the principal prosecutor in this jurisdiction when it comes to assessing whether or not we should take a case based on such evidence again.
Well, much of what's happening on the streets currently is being put down to a potential deployment of another high-ranking loyalist as a potential supergrass. Are you saying that judgment or that perception is potentially misplaced?
No, I read weekly in the papers predictions of forthcoming prosecutions based on this individual's evidence. I wonder where the information is coming from because I don't have it yet, but the material is coming to us very, very shortly. And that individual himself will, there is a timetable set for which he will be brought to court in the middle of next year. And these decisions will have to be made in advance of that. But in making those decisions, I will be applying, and my senior lawyers who are working on the case will be applying the rigour and the care that the law dictates should be taken in a case of that kind.
Mr. McGrory, let me ask you something. How can you explain the apparent tardiness in bringing cases to court in Northern Ireland? Why, in the name of St. Denis, does it take so long here to bring cases to court? From the moment of investigation to the point of prosecution, why does it take so long?
It's multifaceted, Eamon. There are a range of reasons why we have a delay problem, and I accept that we have one in this jurisdiction. But don't forget, the processing of a case from beginning to end involves a number of agencies. It involves an investigative agency, normally the police. It involves a prosecution agency like ourselves. It involves a court process in which court service are involved, the judiciary are involved, defence lawyers are involved, and prosecution lawyers are involved. Now, at every one of those agencies needs to examine what it can do to alleviate the delay.
But this isn't unique, problem. Mr. McCrory. This is happening in every jurisdiction throughout the United Kingdom, throughout the world. There was an outstanding case in England there recently where a young girl, 5 years of age, was killed. Within weeks, there was a man in the courts charged with that killing. How come that happens so quickly? Why does it take us years in some cases to bring a case here from the point of investigation to the point of procedure right into the courts?
Right. Well, let me tell you why. There are a range of significant differences in the criminal justice process in England to that which exists in the jurisdiction of Northern Ireland.
Police like touching, for example.
Hold on, let me just give you some examples. In England, they abolished some years ago the committal procedure. We still have a committal procedure. Now, that means that a different court than the court of decision in a serious case has season of the case to the point of deciding whether or not to send it to the other court. That process involves the prosecution service having to prepare cases for a committal process. That process in itself allows the defence to call witnesses, make legal submissions. When you have a contested committal, it is a ancient and outmoded process, which doesn't even allow, for example, for stenographers or shorthand note-taking. The evidence has to be given in a very slow fashion and be typed on a typewriter as it is taken. All of this leads to a huge amount of process that's unnecessary and causes delay. In England, Eamon, in a serious case of that kind, it goes straight into the Crown Court.
Is that what you'd like to happen here?
Yes, and I have gone to the Justice Committee and I have asked for the Justice Committee to consider making recommendations to the Minister to abolish committals. Now, the Minister has put out a consultation in which it is proposed to make modest but helpful reforms to the committal process. But I have made no bones about my view that would not be sufficient.
Mr. McCrory, I want to bring you down another avenue now. It's an established fact that your father was in the firing line for loyalists at a given time, along with the name of Pat Van Oken and a number of other solicitors at that point in time. We have got the De Silva report coming tomorrow in the next 48 hours. What would you expect to emerge from that report?
Well, Mr. De Silva has, in respect of the issue you just touched upon, has kindly notified me in advance that he will recount the extent to which my late father and to some degree myself were being looked at by loyalist paramilitaries around about the same time as Pat Van Oken. So that is a matter of historical interest and historical record, and I'm aware that it will form a small part of his report. But in terms of any evidential material that might reflect on whether or not there should be any further prosecutions in respect of the murder of Pat Van Oken, I simply have no knowledge.
Mr. McCrory, thank you for giving me your time, and thank you for bringing me into your world. It's been insightful, and good luck in your post. Thank you.